Vayeshev really begins the last part of the story of Bereshit. I really want to explain that much more than the way I just now said it. You have what I would call the first attempt, the foundations, the beginning. The foundations, the beginning, then you have Adam and Noah, whatever. Basically, anybody who's not Jewish. So therefore, we don't care about them because we only care about Jews. Okay, I'm kidding. But what you have is like the first opportunity of Adam. You have the second opportunity of Noah. But at some point, then we have a new player, and that's Avraham, and everything changes afterwards. And once we have Avraham, we move Avraham and Sarah moving all the way on. You know, Yitzchak and Rivka moving all Yaakov. And now we're really finished with Yaakov in the sense that Yaakov in Vayeshev is no longer the main player. The baton was handed off to Yosef in the very beginning, almost in the by the second pasuk. It says Vayeshev Yaakov be'eretz Megoriyov be'eretz Kanan. Eila told Yaakov Yosef ben Shvasrei Shana, and it's just such a strange thing. Eila told Yaakov Yosef. No, Eila told Yaakov. There's 12, normally Toldot would be, if you compare this Toldot with Esav, it mentions all of Esav's kids and so on. Ela Toldot Yaakov, Yosef. So Yosef really is the continuity. In terms of Kabbalistic writings, there's a lot about this. In terms of Yosef's, you know, of all the brothers, he's the only one who makes it into a sphera, right? Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, David, right? So he's different from everyone else. And there's more to say. We'll leave it at that for now. There's an interesting Rashi. Rashi is on the first pasuk, Vayeshev Yaakov Eretz Mogri Aviv. Apparently what concerns Rashi is the two different terms that were used, Vayeshev and Mugurei. Yaakov settles in a place that his Aviv, Yitzchak and Avraham, were migure. Now, migure can mean to live, but I think what's bothering, or Rashi's noticing, is that the word migure comes from the word ger. There's a strangeness about it. Yaakov settles, and he settled, he feels comfortable, he feels good. Now, of course, there's a big difference. The difference between Yaakov and the others is that essentially Avram, even though he may have followers, it's a one-man show. And when you get to Yitzchak again, it's really a one-man show. Yaakov with his kids, they're already a clan. There's a whole group of them. And that may give a different sense. Rashi, though, says something which is astounding. And the only reason it's astounding is the way that Rabbi Soloveitchik understood the Rashi. I'm going to read the Rashi, and then I'll tell you how he read it. It says, Va'od nidrash vayeshev, bikesh Yaakov, it's probably on the second pasuk, not on the first, bikesh Yaakov l'shev b'shalva. Yaakov wanted to live in tranquility. That's very strange. What does it mean? Yaakov wanted to retire, buy a house on the beach, he wanted to take it easy. What does it mean? Bikesh Yaakov l'shev b'shalva. Kafatza lov rogzo she Yosef. And literally the anger of Yosef, which really means the episode of Yosef, jumps him. Rashi then says, again, all this is quoting a midrash, Tzadikim avakshim leshev b'shalva, Tzadikim want to live in tranquility. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, God says, Lo dayin letzadikim hashem utukan lehem, lo'olam haba. It's not enough that you have waiting for you in the world to come. Elo shem avakshim leshev b'shalva b'lmazeh. You want to live in tranquility in this world as well? You wait for what you have coming. It's a very strange thing. The strange part of Rashi is the first part. He wants to live in tranquility. So Rav Soloveitchik explained that you really need to have a parallel between the first part and the second part. Second part is Olam Haba. He understood tranquility here to mean Yemot HaMashiach, the Messianic Age. Yaakov wanted to live. He wanted, that's it. Everything should be completed. Now that's also a very strange thought. So I'm going to ask you a question which is really an easy question. And the only reason it's going to be hard for you is because you went to yeshiva. If you didn't go to yeshiva, it would be the easiest question in the world. What was Yaakov's Judaism? What did he know? So if you went to yeshiva, you'll get confused completely. Okay, he knew Kol Torah Kula, he knew Erev Tchumim, Erev Chatzeros, he knew about Pesach, and he certainly knew about Hanukkah, right? Why else was he looking for oil over there? Pachim Katan, Pach Katan. So again, so of course, he knew all these things. So what did he really know? Yeah? Exactly, 100%. What he really knew was the Bris Ben Absarim. So what did it say in the Bisrein of Sarim? You know, Yodol teda ki, right? You should surely know that your descendants will be. I'll read it exactly. But Perites Vav Yud Gimel. Vayomul Avram Yodea teda ki ger ki yezarachab eretz lo lahem. Your children, by the way, the word ger is there. Your children will be strangers in a land which is not theirs. The Arsam of Farshim will even claim it includes the time in the land of Israel. Right? If we say we start from Yitzchak, right? How can you start from Yitzchak? He's in the land of Israel. No, Eretz Lo Lahem. You'll be a stranger in a land which is not yours. It wasn't his land yet, so he is a stranger in that land. So exactly, Migori Aviv. You all got that or no? V'avdum v'nuel samar bo moshana. And you're going to be enslaved and abused for 400 years. Then Pasuk Tet Zayin, it says, V'dor revi yashuvu hena. The fourth generation come back. Hine hena ki lo sholem. Avon Marie Adhena, because the debt, as it were, or the sin of the Emori is not complete till then. The Mechilta, which is in Shmos, asks on the Pasuk at the end of 430 years, the Jews leave Egypt, the Mechilta asks, hold it a second, which is it? 400 years of the fourth generation? Forget about the problem, the 400 years of 430 years. Okay, that we can reconcile. But what is it, 400 years or fourth generation? So the Mechilta says, it depends. Maximum is 400 years, minimum is fourth generation. We all know, Chishev Esakets, we all know it never got to 400 years. They were only there, how many? 210 years. The slavery itself was only 86 years, right? So it was from the last of the brothers died. But what's the minimum? Fourth generation. So Soloveitchik suggested the following. He said, Yaakov knows this. Again, that's his Judaism. That's what he really knows. So he starts thinking. Fourth generation, Avim Yitzchak Yaakov, his children. You're going to be a land which wasn't yours. He was by Lavan. You'll be abused, you'll be taken advantage of, you'll be enslaved. He goes, that's what happened for 20 years. You're going to leave Berchush Gadol. He left Berchush Gadol. Bikish Yaakov v'shev b'shalva, as far as he was concerned, that's it. Everything has, all the prophecies have come true. We're at the end of history now. Of course, what's the problem? And he realizes how sad that is, how tragic that is. We're at the end of history, everything's been accomplished, and we know the sad truth is we haven't even started yet. I mean, forget about, the slavery hasn't started yet. You think at the end the slavery didn't start yet. Forget about, you know, the destruction of the first temple, the second temple, and Gullus Bavel, and Gullus this and that, and crusades and pogroms and holocausts. Because Yaakov v'shev v'shalva. No man can dream. A man can, that's it, we're there. Fourth generation, we're done. Kafot zalav rog zoshe Yosef. But what happens, something he didn't anticipate, which means, to say that the enemy can be somebody like Nimrod, I get it. To say that the enemy can be somebody like Paro, Avimelech, and so on, I get it. But to say that the problem is going to be an internal problem in the family, that's where we're going to be attacked, that Yaakov didn't get. And the truth is, Yaakov doesn't understand anything when it comes to this whole family. His understanding is really so poor, I'm sorry for saying this, but Chazal say this. Chazal question Yaakov's behavior over here. And I want to go through as much as we can the Mechira, and to, again, we'll see how far we can get. I have too much to say, so maybe it's good that we have next week, but let's at least start. We can't learn next week? Fine. The Yeshiv Yaakov Eretz Mugur Yaviv, Eretz Canaan. Eilu told us Yaakov Yosef ben Shvas Reshana, Yeros Echov Batson, Vahu Naris ben Ebilo ben Ezilpa, Neshe Aviv, Vayave Yosef as Dibasam Ra El Avihim. So let's understand what just now happened. You have in this family a hierarchy of children. It's unfortunate. It's very sad that that's the way that it is. But you have the child of the real wife. You have the child of the almost real wife. You have the child of the concubines. Who's the favorite child? Yosef. We'll understand that soon much better than we do right now, why he's favored, but it's not what you think. Yosef is favored, let's just say, Balabatish or Pashupshat right now. Why is Yosef the favored one? Because he's the child of the only woman that Yaakov really wanted to marry. He wanted to marry Rachel. As a child, he loves Rachel, he loves Yosef by extension, so all that makes sense to her. Yosef is therefore on the highest possible stature. Who's in the lowest rung? The children of Bilhah and Zilpah. What does Yosef then do? He goes and hangs out with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, giving them much more credibility, giving them much more honor, treating them as if they're brothers. So what does this cause? On the one hand, you say, wow, they should really like him for this. What does it cause? It causes the biggest faction, the six sons of Leah, to absolutely detest him. Why? Because when he picks them up a level, those six end up going down a level, being on the same level of Bilhah and Zilpah. Right now, they're just right behind Yosef and perhaps the Yamin, who's really young and really not a player in all this, but they have the second stature. But once Yosef goes and befriends the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, he messes up all the sons of Leah. That's the first thing over here that causes the tension over here. Excuse me? The children. Well, if Yosef is 17, then they range from 17 probably to around 27, more or less. Next pasuk. V'Yisrael ohav es Yosef mikol banov, kiven zakunim hulo. What do you note from that? That you maybe didn't note before? It switched the names over here. Instead of talking about Yaakov, it talked about Yisrael. What would be the significance? That if it were talking about the individual Yaakov, it should say Yaakov. Yisrael is already a national level. Which means his love for Yosef is not what you thought it was. It wasn't just because, as I said before, he's the son of Rachel. It's because he loves him. Why? It says, ki ben zakunim ulo. So ben zakunim, somebody asked before we started, that ben doesn't make sense, he's ben zakunim. Absolutely not. It doesn't make any sense. Ben zakunim, ben yom is ben zakunim. Use the phrase ben zakunim today generally. If you have somebody who's got 5, 6 kids, and then 3, 4, 5 years go by, and then they have a youngest kid. That's a ben zakunim, the son of their old age, somebody who's significantly younger. Yosef is the same age as two or three of his siblings over here. There's not that much of an age difference between some of the sons of Bilhah, Zilpah, even of Leah. There's not a huge difference. Call him a ben zakunim is a little strange, especially because Yaakov does have a ben zakunim. And who's that? That's Binyamin. So therefore, the uncle is over here, uses a different translation of the word zakunim. What does he use? Don't give me. What does he use? He uses the other definition of zaken. Bar Hakim, very smart. A zaken can be an elder, or a zaken can be old. Somebody can be wise because they're an elder. He understands ben zakunim because he was a wise son. Why? Meaning, because Uncleus knows you can't say that it means he's the youngest. No, he loves him because of his capability. And by the way, that's something which I want to put on the side, which we may come back to maybe next week or the week after, whenever we can, that Yosef is somebody who is probably the most impressive person in all of Tanakh, in the sense that everybody who sees him immediately sees his capabilities, his greatness. Every single place he goes, everybody sees it. The only people who don't see it are his brothers. They're the only ones who, for some reason, can't see it. As I said, we'll come back to that point. Bli neder.
That's a national.
Excuse me?
That's a national
level. So if I continue to the end of the pasuk, which I didn't read, the last couple of words, is Vasolok sonis pasim. He makes for Mektonat Pasim. So what's that? That's royal garb. The Ramban explains it, not here, the Ramban explains it in Sefer Shmos, where he's talking about the clothing of the Kohen. So there he talks about the Ketonet, generally he talks about the Ketonet Pasim, says that this is clothing of royalty. The phrase Ketonet Pasim is only used one other time in Tanakh, where it's clearly defined as this is the clothing of royals. What's the context? What's the context of? Of Tamar is wearing this clothing, right, in the whole story, and this is incredibly ironic. If you did hear my shiur about David and Yaakov, who said they heard it. If you did hear it, so now add all this into it, because I didn't say any of this then. That the unbelievable irony is that you have within David's family, you have also Ketonet Pasim, and you also have siblings who I don't know what to say, because over here they hate him. Over there the problem is that he loves her, at least he claims that he loves her, but he ends up raping her, and he ends up getting killed because of it. So those of you who don't know the story, Amnon rapes Tamar, and he rips the clothing off, and the Ketonet Pasim is right there in that story. And afterwards, Avshalom comes, finds out what Amnon did, and he goes and kills him. So over here, we have the Ketonet Pasim, and then we have something which is just the brink of murder. We have siblings who hate their love, but it's, again, the contrast over here, I think, is incredibly interesting. But that's the only other place that we find Ketonet Pasim mentioned in Tanakh. So, but that's what the Ramban says. There it says, black and white, this is the clothing of royalty. If that's the case, what's Yaakov doing? He's dressing Yosef in royal clothing. He is saying that Yosef is the one who's capable. He's the one who's taking over for me. Eilat toldot Yaakov Yosef. He's the one who's taking over. And that's exactly what the pasuk says. So, I guess again, you, by the way, you just heard it three times in a row within two psukim. Eilat toldot Yaakov Yosef, ben zakunim lo, ketonet pasim. They all say the exact same thing. That as far as Yaakov is concerned, who is taking over? Yosef is taking over. Why is he taking over? Because he's most capable. This is just not Yaakov because he loves him, because he's Rachel. This is Yisrael seeing it. This is a national interest. We need Yosef to be the one who's in charge. Point taken?
Yes. So do we say the idea
Kramer says it that the brother is afraid of another, Yishmael Yitzhak case of Yaakov situation with them and Yosef. So that's not just their fear that could have actually been.
Hold on to that. I'm going to try to come back. Yeah. He loved him. I understand your question because it sounds personal. That's exactly why I'm pointing out that it's Yisrael. It's he loves him for his capabilities. He loves him that this is the man who's going to be king. He's the one who's going to take over. Yeah.
Where did he go wrong?
Who's he?
Yaakov Yisrael.
According to Chazal, and this is one of the times Chazal attack Yaakov. They say he never should have displayed his love to one of the children. He never should have given him the coat. Let's stop. I'm going to try to get to this. We'll see if we can. Okay, let's continue. V'yiru echav ki oso hava vihim mikol echav. By the way, they clearly see it on a personal level, not on a national level. V'yisnu'u oso v'loichlu debru l'shalom. They hate him because of it. So right there you have hatred. Right? Hatred comes out right there. Favoritism, hatred. Chazal say right there, Yaakov was wrong. He never should have displayed it. Again, you could put him in your will as the one who's in charge, but the fact that he's building this up is unfortunate. I skipped something, didn't I? Yes. What I skipped was in the end of Pasuk Beis, but Yaveh Yosef is dibasam ra'i lavihim, that Yosef comes and starts reporting on what his brothers are doing. Now, who is he reporting about? You can go various ways. My gut feeling is he's telling on Bnei Leah the way that they mistreat Bnei Bilhah and Zilpah. Which means he's there trying to lift up Bnei Bilhah and Zilpah to create equality among all of them, which is very easy to try to create equality when you're better than all of them and you're loved than all of them. So when you create equality, what you're really doing is that you're creating, it's really a lack of equality. It's equality among everybody else, but not among you. So you can now tell me that what Yosef is guilty of at this point is being very naive. And again, I'm not willing to, I don't think that it's more than that, but what we do see is an interesting dynamic. The dynamic is Yosef tries to help his brothers. The brothers hate him. Yosef is loved by his father. The brothers hate him. Yosef reports on his brothers. And his father doesn't seem to have a problem with that. Quite the opposite. Then we get into our dreams. The first dream is interesting for a couple of reasons. One is it's an economic dream. My economic power will be superior to your economic power. You will bow down to me. The second thing which is interesting, and Rabbi Soloveitchik pointed this out in the book which is known as Chamesh Drashot, in Yiddish, it was the fear drashos, which is four. In Hebrew, it became five. That's a fascinating translation. But in English, it's the Rav speaks. And there they found the fifth. But the original one only had four. There he points out that not only does Yosef understand it's something of economy and economics and financial, but he says it's also very foreign to the way they live their lives. The brothers are shepherds. Being shepherds is very strange to talk about things that were planted and so on. So he says it's obviously a different reality. By the way, did Yosef's dream come true? Absolutely. Yosef goes, he hears Paro's dream. Paro's dream, I don't know if you ever realize it, fuses directly into Yosef's dream. He says, no, this is what's going to happen. There's going to be a famine, storehouses and so on. The brothers are going to come, right, and want to buy his, you know, things which he put away, which means it absolutely works that Yosef's dream is true, even going down to the details, but the brothers, they don't love it. What's their response? Exactly what's on their hearts or on their minds. What is it? What do they say? Are you going to be the king? You're going to rule? Which I'm just saying, that's the subtext. Being a king is the subtext. Who is the king is what this whole story is about. Continue. He has this other dream. This is one of power. They don't love him anymore. The brothers go off to shepherd. Yeah.
Everyone hates him, right?
Yeah. It's hard to say. It's hard to say. I don't know. When you know somebody who's just so capable and so powerful and has such foresight, just vision, it's hard. He's too good. Yeah. It's hard to say. It sounds like everybody. Of course, now you can say, but why did Bnei Bilhah and Zilpah? Well, probably they want to fit in with the other brothers. right? If once B'nai Leah hate him, they can join them, and now they get accepted. Which means, yeah, don't you realize the irony? Yosef is trying to bring them in, and now how are they going to bring in? They all galvanize together against Yosef. Yeah. Let me continue. I'll get to everything. Let me continue. The brothers go off to shepherd. We then have the strange Rashi. It says, the Pasuk said, Pasuk Yud Bet, by the way, it also says they're jealous of him. They hate him and they're jealous of him. You're jealous of somebody when you realize that they have more capability of you. I mean, that's part of the jealousy also. And by the way, of course, Yosef in Gematria is kin'ah, is jealousy. So that's also something which is interesting. Okay. It's also Tzion, Zion. The Medrash says this, that Yosef is like Zion. They're beautiful, but they're also the victims of hatred. The Medrash makes all the connections, but never says the number. But all the numbers are the same in the Medrash as well. Continue. It says then, they go back to Shechem. Shechem is a bad place. Bad things are going to happen by Shechem. We know that already. Vayomer Yisrael. Notice the name is Yisrael again. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef Elo Achicha Rorim B'Shechem L'chov Eshalcha Aleihem Vayomer Lo Ineni Vayomer Lelechna Re'ei Et Shlom Achecha V'Et Shlom Hatzon V'Ashiveinu Davar V'Yishalcheu Mi'Emi Chevron V'Yivo Shechema. First of all, Yosef, who reports things back to his father loves it. His father utilizes this. Yosef is the favorite son, stays at home, sends him off, give me a report, come back to me. All the other brothers work, he doesn't work, he wears his fancy clothes, and he's going to go and bring back reports. Which I'm just saying is that Yaakov and Yosef are in sync, but they're not in sync with anybody else. When it says that he sends him, he emek Chevron, so here Rashi makes this observation that emek Chevron, he goes, what are you talking about? Chevron is up on a hill. Now pshat is that he walks him out of Chevron, he's Malavahim, and goes down to the first valley, and that's where he sends it out from. But Rashi says that, no, there's something much deeper here, that Mi'emi Chevron means with something deeper than Chevron, and that's the Marana Machpelah. Deep, buried deep below is Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu has a covenant, the Brit Ben Abitar. And what does it say? That you're going to be slaves. That means this is the beginning. Which, of course, is ironic, because to go down to slavery in Egypt, you have to go south, and he's going north. But, of course, we know this is an aliyah, letzarach yerida. He's going north, he's going to end up going south. I mean, that's what ended up happening over here. The next pasuk is one which is also quite important, and I don't know if we should get into it now, so we'll skip it. The brothers see him coming from afar. No, we'll read that. We won't skip it. But in so ish, he gets lost. Because the brothers are really not by Shechem, they're by Dotan. Dotan is around 10 kilometers north of Shechem. It's probably today what we call Jenin, which is not a good place either. So he goes to Shechem, the brothers aren't there. The story could have ended, go back home, I couldn't find him. Instead, he bumps into some anonymous man who says, what are you looking for, and what does Yosef say? And this is always Yosef. This really tells you who Yosef is. I'm looking for my brothers. That's the most sincere thing in the whole chapter. Yosef really does look for his brothers. He does care, he really does love and care about his brothers. The problem is the brothers can't stand him. So this is what Yosef refers to later on when he tries to make up with his brothers and says, it wasn't you who sold me, God did it. Because he realizes that if he didn't bump into a guy along the road who said where your brothers are, he never would have found him. So he realized this was the hand of God pushing him over there. And that's why Rashi here says, Ha'ish, Ish Gavriel, must be a Malach, and so on and so forth. The brothers see him from afar. The brothers see him from afar, and before he even comes close, they plot to kill him. By the way, that's pretty harsh. He's not even there yet. Let's kill him. And what do they say? Which more likely than not is who? Shimon Alevi. Why did I say it's Shimon and Levi? Because the Ish Elachav, already before Ish Ben Achav, is Shimon and Levi. And they're the ones who killed Shechem. So here's my first observation about this. Once you kill somebody, killing is on the table as a possibility. Which means, had the brothers never wiped out the city of Shechem, and why did they wipe out Shechem? Because they abused their sister. So now Yosef is abusing them. So therefore, in their minds, by the way, you can tell me that you can argue against this, but in their minds, this becomes something which is logical. Now, it could very well be that at certain times in your life, maybe every one of us has said, I'm going to kill him or whatever, and we don't really mean it. It actually sounds like they mean it. And as I say, being that they are people who already have committed a crime in this exact location, right? They just passed by Shechem. You know, old memories of Shechem. Remember the good times you used to have in Shechem when we wiped out the city, right? So I'm just pointing out they're right here and they're talking about killing. And Ish Elachiv, a man to his brother, very much sounds that Shimon and Levi. So that's why it gets... But not just let's kill him. The whole plan is there. Let's kill him. We'll put him in a pit, right? We'll throw him in one of the pits and we'll say wild beast ate him and then we'll see what will be of the dreams. By the way, why do they care about the dreams? Apparently they really do. They, deep down inside, they do know what's going to happen. But that's part of, I think, what's going on. Although you can argue on that point. Pasuk of Aleph. V'yishma Reuven, v'yitzilei mi'adam v'yom alona kinu nafesh. Reuven saves him and says, we're not going to kill anybody. Meaning, Reuven is against the murder. Shimon and Levi are the ones who wiped out the city. Reuven is against this. Also, as the oldest, he'll probably get the most responsibility. V'yom alem Reuven al tishpachu dam. Do not commit murder. Don't spill blood. Hashlichu oto al abor hazeh, shabin bar. V'yad al tishlichu bo, l'man hitzil to mi'adam l'hashivo al aviv. So there's two parts to what Reuven does. One is what he says and one is what he thinks. What does he say or how do they understand what he said? The way they understand it is not that they shouldn't kill him, but what is he saying? Don't murder him. Rather, murder is very messy. Not just physically. It's very messy emotionally. You have to deal with all this guilt and so on. It's very bad. Rather, don't kill him. Just throw him in a pit. In the pit, he's going to die naturally. But what was his intention? His intention is to save him. Which means Reuven does not stand up against the masses. He just says, let's not do the act. Let's do it in a more clever way. Now, Reuven is the oldest. Had he stood up now and said, are you people out of your minds? What are you talking about? The other thing which is really interesting then is Reuven disappears. Right? Reuven comes back. He goes, oh my God, he's gone. It's very, very strange. Rashi gives two interpretations. Why does Rashi give two? Because, well, at least the first one doesn't work. First one's very nice, but it just doesn't make any sense. First interpretation, Rashi says, is because it was Reuven's turn to serve his father, so he goes back to serve his father, he comes back and Yosef is gone. Excuse me. Just stop. If he's going back to his father, take him with you and bring him back to your father, right? Secondly, if you're going to go back to your father, just think about the geography and the chronology. You're going to go back to your father, help your father, and then expect to come in to save you. What are you, crazy? You're going to leave him in the pit for a couple of... I mean, the whole thing doesn't seem to make sense. What's Rashi's second interpretation? Is that he did tshuva. He was davening, he was fasting, he was crying, he was davening. So my wife likes that one because she thinks that whenever men are needed to do anything, they're busy davening someplace. To which I responded, and that's why Muslims who have more than one wife, that's why they daven five times a day, because they got to get out of the house even more. Okay? What do you mean he's davening now? In the middle of Mechiras Yosef, he's davening? So the Rav had an unbelievable interpretation on this. He said that what's going on through his mind, just think a second, Esau gets mad at Yaakov. What does he say? When our father is dead, I'm going to kill him. Okay, Esau has kibbutz of aim. So what's Reuven saying? What's wrong with these people? Even a bloodthirsty animal like Esau, I'm sorry, that's not politically correct. Even a bloodthirsty animal like Esau is going to wants to kill Yaakov. He's going to wait for Yaakov. He's going to wait for Yitzchak to be dead. These brothers don't even care what their father thinks. How do they have such chutzpah to go against their father? Where do they get this from? And then it hits him. That the first one to defy their father was him. When he went, and now you can read it, you know, according to what the Chumash actually says, that he sleeps with Bila, or the whitewash that that Chazal say, that he just moved the bed. But the Chazal don't say he didn't do it. They just said, Kol ha'omer Reuven, chota ein elatoya. Why? Kol ha'omer, Reuven says it, he's making a mistake. Why? Because he did tshuva. If he did tshuva, you shouldn't say it. But of course he did it. But I mean, that's what the Chumash says. That's what Yaakov says when he talks to him in Parshas Vayechi. Kilisa mishkavei avicha. You got on your father's bed. But when Reuven starts thinking about this and saying, you know, what in the world? Where did this come from? He realizes it comes from him. And at that moment, Reuven was completely shattered. He goes off into the forest and he starts to cry and he starts to pray. And he realizes, if it wouldn't be for me, if I would not have been the first one to open up the gate to show that you can defy what your father wants, they never would have done this. So, what are we up to now? The brothers say, kill him. Reuven says, throw him into a pit. He wants to save him. But Yosef is in a pit. And then something happens. Pay attention. It's very interesting what happens. Pasuk Kaf Gimel. Yosef finally arrives. Vayehi kasher ba Yosef el achiv. Vayevshitu es Yosef. Es ketunato es ketunas habasim asher alav. They ripped the clothing off him. Now we understand that. They hate the clothing. Vayichu, they take him. Vayishlichu oso haborav haborek ein bo mayim. And they throw him in to the pit. And then they do something bizarre. You know, it's really hard ripping clothing off of somebody and really build up an appetite doing this. They decide to sit down and have a meal. By the way, while they're having this meal, do they hear Yosef screaming? The Rashbam, who also has a whole cover-up, and there's a whole reason for his cover-up, complete cover-up, the Rashbam says things which are absolutely nothing to do with Pshat over here. He actually says the brothers didn't sell him even. You go look at the Rashbam, but it's not true. It's completely not true. And if people try to tell you it's true, it's not true. The Rashbam actually was dealing with, as far as I could tell, he was dealing with, he was involved in polemics with Christians, and therefore, especially this time of year, you're getting towards Hanukkah and Christmas, and they would have passion plays, which would, among other things, they would replay the sale of Yosef and say, look how terrible the Jews are. I mean, the Jews, Judas, right, who rejects Jesus, and you have the Jews who are selling Yosef, look how bad they are. So the Rashbam goes, writes a brilliant commentary, and says, no, the Jews never sold him. If you want, I'll show you how he says in the Pesukim, but it's not true. He claims that they were far away, and they didn't know what was happening. They were too far away, didn't notice when he was taken. But it's not true. Why isn't it true? And I'll ask you, did he hear them screaming? Yes. How do we know? That when the brothers get thrown in the pit by Yosef, what do they say? Because we heard our brothers screaming, and we ignored it. So it seems to me that's exactly what happens here. By the way, I'm going to say something else, which I think is very, very, I think is very deep, and I think is true as well. The beginning of going down to Egypt, because that's what this is. When they sell that's the great irony. If you want, you can either call it hashkach or you can call it karma. They're going to sell Yosef as a slave and think that he's going to end up as a slave. What ends up happening? All of their children end up as slaves, right? That's what ends up happening over here. But before Yosef gets sent down, they sit down and have a meal, and that's a bizarre meal. It's a meal of a fractured family. Yosef is in the pit and screaming, and they're sitting, can you pass the hummus and stuff? When we leave Egypt, what does God say? Sit down and have a meal as a family before you leave. It seems to me that the Pesach Seder that they have in Egypt is a tikkun for this very meal that they're having right over here. Continue. So they're sitting down and having a meal. V'yishvu lechol lechem. V'yisue nehem. They lift up their eyes. So on and so forth. They say a band, and then Yehuda says, now I want to stop right now. I'm going to tell you something which I haven't seen anybody say, certainly not black and white. Maybe you'll find somebody who said it. But I think at that moment, the following happened. Again, what's on the table right now? Kill him or let him die by himself. That's basically what's on the table. Yehuda then looks and says, wow, there's a sign from God. What's the sign from God? God just sent them a sign. God just told them what they want. Why? Now go back to what you started to say before about a reject, you know, the family, the way that it's worked till now. When in the Avram family, Yitzchak is there and they can't deal with Yishmael, Sarah says, get rid of him. Avram hesitates, and God says, whatever Sarah says, you listen to. Who shows up just now? Yishmael shows up. So you say, that's a sign from God. Which means everybody focuses on it. The fact that it's a band from Yishmaelim, that's the message. So Yehuda sees this. Now listen, it's very interesting. Reuven, in his whole speech, never used one word. You know which word he didn't use? Brother. Don't spill blood. Don't commit murder. Put him in the pit. Never use the word brother. Listen to Yehuda. Yehuda says something which is, again, completely bizarre. Vayomer Yehuda el Echov, ma betza ki nerog et achinu. What do we gain by killing our brother? Oh, by the way, what are you expecting to say now? First of all, the word betza is very strange. What are we going to make? Can you imagine what anti-Semites do with that? What are we going to make by killing our brother? Let's sell him instead. v'kisinu et demo, and then cover up his blood. L'chuvanim kareinu li'yishma'elim. The point is not just to sell him. What's the point? Li'yishma'elim. That's the main point. You all understand what I'm saying?
It's
exactly. He is parallel to Yishmael. Yishmael is rejected. Yosef is rejected. Sell him to the Yishmaelim. And what I'm claiming now is what Yosef is really saying is that he has the same status as Yishmael. Now, if that is not a good enough sign, what happens right then? Vishmuachi, they'll agree. Vayavru anashim midyanim. The midyanim, who are the midyanim? Bum, 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 bum. Who are the midyanim? Who's their father? Who's Midian's father? Who's Midian's father? It's so good, you don't even know, it's funny. Avram Avinu. He's one of B'nai Keturah. It even says it in the Chumash, by the way. And you know what it says after he's born? It says that Avram gives everything he owns to Yitzchak and sends away the B'nai HaPilagshim. He sends them all away. So the Yishmaelim come by, the Midianim come by, this is a sign from heaven. These are the ones who have been rejected. As far as they're concerned, 100% this is what God wants. Get rid of Yosef. Is that good? Yes. Yes. Right. Now again, what the Rashbam claims, because it's not, there's just a strange, I don't want to get into it, but he claims that no, the brothers never did it. They were sitting there, the Midianim take him out, and they sell him to the Yishmaelim. No. The Ishmaelim involved, the Midianim involved, they may have even been together. All of this, there are things that need to be explained, but I'm just leaving all that. It's the sign which is the important thing. It's the Ishmaelim and Midianim when you realize they both have a common denominator. They're both sons of Avram who've been rejected. That's what's important over here. Which means what I'm claiming, it's not the sale, it's the getting rid of him which is the important thing. Okay, let's continue. They have one problem now. What's the problem? How do you tell Yaakov that they sort of sold his son as a, his beloved son, as a slave? How do you, you know, communicate that? There's a little bit of a problem. So what do they do? Did they lie to him? Did they lie to Yaakov? So you'd probably have to say, okay, define lie. And once you say that, you're in trouble. You know that already, right? You'll sound like Clinton, right? So what do they do? Pasuk Lamed Bet. V'yishlachehu et ktonet ha-pasim v'yaviu al avihim. They send off the ktonet ha-pasim to their father, v'yomru. And what do they say? I've told you many times, the most important, the first level of interpretation is always the tone of voice. What tone of voice do they use when they say this? Is the tone of voice going to be one that, wow, this is like the funniest thing ever, we found this code full of blood, this is like hilarious? Or is this totally dispassionate? We found this, don't know what this is. Or do they cry when they say it? Is their voice cracking? Is it like full of emotion? And I would say it's the latter, because that works the best. And that's the lie, by the way. The lie is the false emotion. Let's read the words. They say they found it, they send it, and they come, and they say the following to him. V'yavil avim v'yomru, zot matzanu. This is what we found. Hakerna, do you recognize it? Haktonet binchahi imlo. Is this your son's or not? Now, by the way, you also realize that it's very harsh. It really is harsh what they say, but I'm going to still claim they say it with the greatest amount of compassion that they can muster. Of course, Yaakov ruins everything by taking this far too personally, and he's all upset, and he cries, and he mourns, and he can't stop mourning, and he keeps on mourning, and so on. And I'm saying he ruins everything for them, because they don't think it's really going to go that way. And that's the way that the first... That's the way that this... I'm kidding, but that's the way that this episode ends. What happens next is Vayered Yehuda. Yeah. Say it again. I can't hear you. They were lying to themselves. I agree with you 100%. Because if it was really true, it was really a sign, so what do? You go back to your father with a great deal of confidence and you say, we did exactly what we were supposed to do and we sold Yosef and you're proud of it. They're not proud of it. They know that they're wrong. So I agree with you. But what's the beauty of this? The beauty of what I'm saying is that you're able to convince yourself of all kinds of things. See, all of us occasionally will sin. Okay? That's good. It's okay to sin. What's bad? What's bad is when you do a sin and convince yourself that your sin is a mitzvah. Because when you convince yourself that your sin is a mitzvah, you're never going to do tshuva on that. No, I did this perfectly fine. They're trying to convince themselves that this is perfectly fine and perfectly acceptable. Do they know deep inside that that's absolutely ridiculous? Of course they do. They can't go over to Yaakov and tell him what they did. Because, again, if they're right, go over to Yaakov and say, we did what Avram did, what Sarah did, what we did is actually the moral thing to do. But they knew that Yaakov had a problem. What was Yaakov's problem? For some bizarre reason, he actually likes this person. Okay, they can't imagine why this would possibly be. We again then get to Perek Lamed Chet. And I want to state something. The last pasuk of Lamed Zayin is V'hamidyanim Midanim, which is also a son of Avraham from Bnei Keturah. V'midyanim Machuro to El Mitzrayim LePotifas Ris Paro Sarah Tabachim. Sarah Tabachim most likely does not mean the butcher, you have the butcher and the baker and the candlestick maker and all that. No. Sarah Tabachim most likely means, if you look at Unculus, which I think I have here, it is the chief executioner. Which just makes the whole thing a little bit scarier. Perek Lamed Tet begins in precisely the same point. The Yosef Rad Mitzrayim, if you knew Potiphar Sarah, Paro, Sarah Tabachim, Ish Mitzrim, Yada Yishmaelim. So, okay, which is it? Yishmaelim. That's why I said there's much more to talk about there. Leave it. Perek Lamed Ched is completely out of context. It's actually one of the chapters that the Bible critics enjoyed pointing out in terms of Torah coming from different kinds of sources, because it's just out of chronology. I don't want to get too much into this, but what I will say is that it's really stupid. I'm sorry for putting it that way, but why am I saying it's really stupid? It's essentially saying, let's take a look at the book and only decide it has to go in chronology. By the way, the Chumash does not always follow chronology. In case you think that there's really a machloket, yesh muktam mukhla Torah, ein muktam mukhla, that's not true. There is a machloket, but there's definitely ein muktam mukhla Torah, 100%. The only machloket which exists, if that should be in your arsenal to use whenever you want to solve a problem. Which means you cannot read the first couple of chapters in Bamidbar and claim it's in chronological order. It's not. You can't say it. Even the Ramban who says Yesh Mukhtar, he says no, Yesh Mukhtar, unless there's a reason to, you know, that you can't say it. So the default is, over here as well, Yosef is getting to Egypt. Yosef got to Egypt. And then in chapter 38, Yehuda gets married. Yehuda has a kid. Yehuda has another kid. Yehuda has another kid. Yehuda's wife gets married. Yehuda's son gets married. Yehuda's son, and we start moving on with. We go years and years in Yehuda's life. Now, if I say everything's in chronology, I have a big problem. So we have here they found a Yehuda manuscript and they just threw it in because they didn't know what to do with it. No. Anybody who's ever watched television should get this. Forget about literature. If you've watched television, you know that there's such a thing called character development. You take one character, develop them to a point. You take a second character and develop them to a point. Then the two characters are going to meet down the line. By the way, what's the real story over here? Or at least what we think the real story is? The real story is who's really going to be king. Is Yosef going to be king? Or is Yehuda going to be king? That's really what the story is, which is going on over here. Okay, pause. The reason that Yehuda's story is told is because this is all about Yehuda becoming king. That's what this chapter is doing right here. Now, let's go into it a little bit, as much time as we have, because I know you have to eat, and that's more important than this. So, Yehuda's first son dies. What should go through Yehuda's mind? No. Punishment. Yehuda should be saying this. Again, if we're writing the book, this is what we write right now. This is, by the way, one of the reasons why the Maharal said, more or less, that if God didn't write the Torah, then an anti-Semite did. Because, you know, all the negative things that we have over here. By the way, that was one of his proofs of divinity of the Torah. Was all the bad things it says. You're not going to include Mechiras Yosef. You're not going to include all these things that happens to Yehuda. When Yehuda's first son dies, I'm writing the story, this is how I write it. You ready? He hears his son dies. Flashback. What moment? The moment he destroyed his father and he looked in his eyes and he said, do you recognize your son's code? And he says to himself, my God, God is punishing me now. Okay, either God or karma, whichever you like. God is punishing me now because I made my father think that he lost his son. Now I really lost my son as punishment for making my father. And what should Yehuda do? Again, if we're writing it, how do I write the story? Yehuda then goes to Yaakov. He buries his son. He goes to Yaakov and he says, I know you may never speak to me the rest of your life. I know you may disinherit me. And I understand it. I now know what it's like to lose a child. And it's the worst experience one can ever have. Yosef's not dead. We sold him. I will spend to my last day of my life trying to find him and bring him back to you. Right? That's how I write the story. Isn't that a better story than the Chumash has? And that's what you would expect in terms of empathy coming out of Yehuda. That's what we would expect. Instead, what happens? Just moves on. Second son marries Tamar. Second son drops dead. Again, what should he say now? Same thing. Empathy. Know how Yaakov feels. Go to Yaakov. And instead, what does he say? Well, damn, I'm not going to give the third one because she may kill him also. No, which it's like something over here is like completely missing over here. Totally well-developed ability to deflect all responsibility onto others, taking no personal responsibility himself. Again, that's not an easy thing to do. So you realize that Yehuda is somebody, you know, ma betza, what are we going to gain? Let's sell him. Let's get rid of him, and so on. This chapter begins, Vayered Yehuda. Rashi brings, the Medrash tells us, what does it mean, Vayered Yehuda? The brother said, look how upset Yaakov is. Look how upset our father is. If you would have said, don't sell him or don't kill him, we would have listened to you. You would have said, bring him back, we would have listened to you. You would such, you know, what did you do say to kill him? And therefore, Vayered Yehuda. Yehuda's reputation was diminished. Vayered Yehuda. Yeah? I'm in the middle. He wants the end already. So let me continue. So then what happens? Then we're told that Yehuda's wife dies. He gets over. Okay. By Tamar, what does he tell her? You just wait. You wait. You wait. And but he says he has no intention of giving his third son because she may mess him up as well. Yehuda's wife dies. By the way, what should he now feel? Again, empathy towards Tamar. It's not easy to be alone. It's not easy to, you know, just to live a life all by yourself. But instead, again, very helpful. He goes on a road trip. He goes, check out the flocks, whatever. She hears about that she dressed up, right? You know the story? They skipped this and where you... Okay. That's the best way to get you to learn it, right? So she dresses up as a prostitute and whatever, and he has like the best pickup line ever, can I sleep with you? And that's what it says. Actually, it's better than what it says. And she says, what are you going to give me? So he said, I'll send you a goat. So she says, yeah. And in the meantime, you know, the check is in the mail, right? And in the meantime, so what do you want? So then she asks for his ring, she asks for his staff, and she asks for his coat. And again, you all know the story, what happens afterwards, right? Good. Now, if I were Tamar, again, I just want to get into Tamar now. Get into her mindset. If you're Tamar, here's a man who's abused you. Here's a man who's left you for all these years alone. Here's a man who's destroyed your life. And you have all his personal effects. Today's world, press conference. Right, press conference, humiliate him, destroy him, and whatever. Instead, Yehuda finds out Tamar has been sleeping around. By the way, he hasn't been. I mean, well, maybe he has. But judges her, kill her. Tamar then does something which is, again, absolutely bizarre. Because instead of saying, no, this is you, and so on, and calling him on it, what does she say instead? He moots eight. She's taken out to be killed. She sends him lemor, and she says, "La isha sher elilo anochi hara." This is the man who got me pregnant. Vatomer, and she says, "Hakerna, do you recognize? Lemiachotem v'tilma matea ele. Do you recognize who these things?" It's the exact words that Yehuda used. So I want to make an observation now. By the way, Robert Alter, who was famous writer, he wrote about this in commentary in 1975, and he came up with it himself. He didn't notice that it was actually all in Midrash Rabbah. Everything he said was in Midrash Rabbah. Everything I'm saying now is Midrash Rabbah as well. Maybe I'll quote some of the Midrashim. But what happened? Chapter 37 is a story of hatred, deceit, hatred, jealousy, and finally deceit. The deception takes place with the goat, the blood of the goat. It takes place with words, and it takes place with the coat. Chapter 38 is a chapter also has deception in it. Deception has to do with Tamar and Yehuda. It has to do with the lack of decency, lack of honesty, lack of empathy. And then we have the goat, which disappears, right? Who should he give it to? We then have the coat, and finally we have the exact same words, Haker Na, do you recognize? What's Yehuda's response to this in the next pasuk? Vayaker Yehuda. Yehuda recognized. Vayomer, and he says, Tzotka Mimeni, she's more righteous than I am. According to the Tosefta, the moment Tosefta is found in Brachos Perek Dalad, Halach Yud Zayin, that he admitted it. He's the first person to admit that he's wrong. This is where we find admission that I'm wrong. It's interesting that the name Yehuda, when he was named, Leah gave him the name Yehuda, and she says she was thankful to God, right? She was thankful, Hoda'ah, right? Halel v'Hoda'ah. She was thankful. Over here, Yehuda earns his name by admission. That's a different connotation of the same word. He was mode. Modimenach. He was mode. He admitted that he was wrong. Modimenach was really more thanks. The Medrash, which is in Bereishis Rabbah, says as follows. Vayehi be'esahi, and it happened during that time. This is Vayered Yehudu, and Yehuda goes down. Rabbi Shmuel ben Nachum patach kenoch yadati et hamachshavot. Quotes a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. What was happening in the world during this time? Shvatim hayu oskim b'mechirat ha'ar shel Yosef. The brothers were involved in the sale of Yosef. V'Yosef haya asuk b'sako v'tanito. Yosef was involved in his mourning and his fasting. Reuven haya asuk b'sako v'tanito. Reuven was mourning and fasting. V'Yaakov haya asuk b'sako v'tanito. And Yaakov was fasting and mourning. V'Yehuda, what was Yehuda doing? Now, of course, you should say Yehuda was selling Yosef. He says, no. Yehuda moved on. I tell you, Yehuda is very healthy. He moves on. Yehuda was busy. Haya asuk likachlo isha. Time to move on. Time to get married. Start a life. Then the Medrash asks the most unbelievable question. Doesn't say, it actually says it as a statement. And what was God doing? V'kodesh Baruch. Where was God when all this was happening? It says, V'kodesh Baruch haya osek boru oro shemelech ha-mashiach. That God was creating the light of Mashiach. Which means the Medrash is saying it's so much stronger than I said it. I phrased it before, so who's going to be the Melech? Is Yosef going to be the Melech, or is Yehuda going to be the Melech? And you know what? Yosef is a real good candidate. Line them up one against the other. Yosef has empathy. Yosef cares about his brothers. Yosef takes care of his brothers. Yosef is tempted by Mrs. Potiphar, right? Here's to you, Mrs. Potiphar. Yosef is tempted by Mrs. Potiphar, and what does he say? That would be a sin. By the way, if he sinned, we could all justify it. 17 years old, hormones, you know, good career move. What does he say? It would be a sin against God. Sin against your husband. I can't do this. So Yosef is Yosef HaTzadik, refuses to sin, and Yehuda is sleeping with his daughter-in-law. Ah, but he can justify himself. He can say, I didn't know it was my daughter-in-law. I thought she was a prostitute. Okay, that's much better. So you think about it, you say, hold it. What in the world are we talking about over here? How in the world can Yehuda possibly be the one who that's where the Malchus is going to come? So apparently what God is telling us is Yosef is a tzaddik. Correct. Yosef is a tzaddik. Tzaddikim are very annoying. Tzaddikim can't always communicate properly. Tzaddikim can't always relate, and we can't always relate to them. But Yehuda, who knows how to sin, that's completely different. Which means Yehuda, who was there, who sinned, this moment, when Yehuda turns around, and he could have killed her, he could have wiped her out, she was embarrassing, could have covered her up, just got, yes, right, sure, I'm the one, good, goodbye, killed her. Instead, at that moment, when Yehuda says, Tzot kamimeni, when it says, Vayakir Yehuda, I don't believe for a second it means only in terms of this particular episode. I think it's everything. It's Vayakir Yehuda, the whole thing, Mechiras Yosef, lying to his father, everything. Yehuda is two different Yehudas in Chumash. There's Yehuda up to this point and after this point. Up to this point, as I said, he's selfish, self-centered, self-involved, doesn't care about anyone else. And Yehuda, from this point onward, is somebody who cares. He then stands up and says to his father, or says to Yosef, send Binyamin back to his father. His father loves him. I'll stake his place over here. That's not the Yehuda that we met all the way in the beginning. That's a different Yehuda. Who created that Yehuda? Apparently Tamar created this Yehuda. David HaMelech has a lot of Yehuda in him. David HaMelech has a lot of Yehuda, a lot of the sin, but the ability to recognize the sin. Just going to say a postscript to all this. I don't know if you're familiar with the book, Eim HaBinim Smecha, written by Rabbi Teichtel. He was in the middle, right? You know the story, I presume. He was a Satmar Chassid. The Satmar Rebbe, you know, Zionism was not his thing. And he essentially said it's better to stay in Europe than to go to Israel, certainly. And as somebody who was connected to him, Rabbi Teichtel believed him and ended up giving his life up because of it, being killed. But along the way, he came to this realization, because what was one of the arguments against Zionism was that from sinners like this, nothing good can ever emerge. The Zionists are secular Zionists, and nothing good could emerge from this. And Rabbi Teichtel's conclusion was, basically looking at our psukim, looking at the Parsha of Yehuda, looking at Tamar, and saying that God uses broken vessels. God uses kelim shvurim. That from sin, it's possible to emerge with greatness. That from sin, and by the way, this is what Christianity never understood. Christianity felt that Jesus has to be, you know, a virgin birth, immaculate conception, and so on. And it's very interesting that New Testament names, I mean, again, I believe the whole thing is fiction, but that in the New Testament they name his father Joseph. He's the son of Yosef. Yosef is a tzaddik. It's just to me very interesting that that happens to be the name of the character of Jesus' father. But that's their whole idea in terms of very far away from sin. It is so far from being a Ben David HaMelech. David was somebody who's far more complex. David's kids are far more complex. David is full of sin, but David is able also to say, Chatasi Lashem. He goes, I sinned. I'm wrong. He was able to stand up and write all of Sefer Tehillim, and a lot of them have to do with his sins. I'm wrong. I sinned. I'm wrong. That is the power of Mashiach. That's the Orosh HaMelech HaMashiach. Which means that before we go down into Egypt, before we're going to have even our first real slavery, despite what Yaakov may have thought, God already creates the light for Mashiach who's going to come at the end of days. That power is already created. The fight over here is who's going to be the king. So we just thought it's a fight. Yosef, Yehuda, who's going to be king? Yehuda's going to win out. But it's not just who's going to be king. Yehuda's going to end up having coming from him, Melech Mashiach. And that comes from that moment that he says, Vayakir Yehuda, Vayomer, Tzadka, Imeni. That's the Orosh HaMelech HaMashiach.